Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of Legion of News is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News!
From high atop the milkpacking district in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon, this, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
A teenager is found in Wilsonville with a fractured skull. An armed man uses his daughter as a human shield. And a man in Denver robs a cupcake store with a blood-filled syringe.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, prepare yourselves for glory. This is Legion of News.
Good afternoon, I'm Dawn Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Thursday, July 28th, 2011. Police say a man had a loaded handgun and was holding his six-year-old daughter as a shield when he was arrested Tuesday evening at Mount Tabor Park. The man had spit on a park volunteer and threatened the volunteer with a Springfield Armory .40 caliber pistol.
Yes, he threatened her with the pollinated area of a flower stem.
Let me take a run at this again. He threatened the volunteer with a Springfield Armory .40 caliber pistol.
Okay, that too.
According to Portland Police Bureau spokesman Lieutenant Robert King. When police arrived, park patrons pointed out the suspect, who walked away to a playground, grabbed a girl off the equipment, and used her as a shield. He was asked repeatedly to put the girl down. He told officers the girl was his daughter. It was only after several additional officers arrived that he put down the girl and was arrested. Hugh Brandon Neustell, 32, was accused of attempted coercion, disorderly conduct, harassment, interfering with a police officer, reckless endangering, and possessing a weapon in a park.
Did he explain exactly why he was carrying her? Well, was he carrying her before, or did he just pick her up?
He ran over and plucked her off of the equipment and held her in front of him once the cops arrived.
Some sort of fleshy Kevlar.
Yes.
Well, I mean, it seems like it was effective in the short term, at least. I mean, he can't... Look, what would Mr. Wizard do? You would use the tools that are available to you at the time.
He's obviously a man who is familiar with the Portland police's tendency to shoot first and ask questions later, so he thought... Maybe they have a soft spot for kids.
Maybe
they'll just tase her.
As Gunny Hightower would say, he adapted, Don. He improvised. He overcame. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. It is Thursday, July 28th, 2011. Thank you for coming by. Later on this hour, we'll get your entertainment news, also science on the march, et cetera, so on and so forth. You can get this program later on the day via iTunes or as a direct MP3 download here or at legionofnews.com. You can also take it with you on your mobile device if you like. That is mobile.cascadia.fm, mobile.cascadia.fm. Cascadia.fm. Here is Don Taylor.
Police are trying to figure out how a teen ended up alone and bleeding in the road with a serious head injury in Wilsonville on Saturday night. The 17-year-old was found on the ground in the eastbound lanes of Southwest Wilsonville Road, just west of Boone's Ferry Road and near the railroad tracks just before 9 p.m. He had a fractured skull, an internal brain injury, and numerous scrapes on his legs and arms. The patient was transported to OHSU, but he still does not recall how he was injured. Investigators pieced together some clues, and we're hoping the public may have tips to help fill in the blanks. Police believe the teen, whose name has not been released, was with a friend named Omar Espina Lopez. The two were involved in a minor traffic accident, but no one was hurt. Then the teen left his friend, only to be found injured in the road about 2 miles away 45 minutes later. Lopez had been driving a 1998 gold-colored Toyota pickup bearing Oregon plates ZMK700 at the time of the accident. Now police want to hear from anyone who saw the truck in the Wilsonville area between 8 and 9 p.m. on Saturday. They're also urging anyone to come forward who may have seen the victim before police arrived. He was wearing a blue T-shirt, black shorts, and black tennis shoes.
And this is where? Wilsonville?
Wilsonville.
All right. No one wants to be found bleeding in Wilsonville. That's a bad way, not just to end your life, but just to end a day.
There are worse places to be found bleeding, though, I will say.
I suppose.
Camas.
Yeah, I mean, I guess. It's just, it lacks any sort of, it doesn't even have the grim poetry being found bleeding in Oakland.
No.
You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. It is Thursday. Don't forget the Rick Emerson radio program coming up next hour at rickemersonshow.com. That is rickemersonshow.com, where you stand arm in arm with your other comrades in amusement and comedy. Here is Don Taylor at the news desk.
The House is set to vote today on John Boehner's two-step debt proposal. Boehner and other Republican leaders have tweaked the original bill slightly to ensure that the spending cuts of $917 billion now exceed the total amount that would add to the debt ceiling, $900 billion. It's unclear if the changes will be enough to win over conservative skeptics, but GOP leaders have expressed increasing optimism that they now have the votes needed to move the bill in the lower chamber. If House Democrats stay united in opposition, Boehner must limit defections from within his own party to 23 in order to pass the measure. That means that the bill's fate will likely rest with a group of 39 Republicans who have signed the so-called cut, cap, and balance pledge. According to the blog The Hill, 19 of those 39 have said they'll oppose it or will likely oppose it. Only 6 of them have publicly committed to backing the bill or are leaning towards supporting it. Then there are 14 others who have not said one way or the other how they're going to vote.
Can we irresistibly start calling these people the 39 steps to victory? Or something like that? That's what the media does.
Boehner says there's no reason for senators to say no to this bill once it reaches their chamber.
Let's see. This is debt one.
Yes. We said yes on a budget. We've said yes on a plan last week. Now we're saying yes again this week on a plan. When is somebody on the other side of the aisle going to take yes for an answer?
Here's the great thing is they're all starting to sound a little drunk at this point because nobody's able to go home. I get the feeling nobody's allowed to get a nap at any point. And they're just sitting
there's a strict no-horror policy while this is on the table.
And they're just there filling themselves with Kung Pao chicken and vodka, I think, and whatever they can find in a desk drawer in some page's office. And so everybody's starting to slur their words and sound a little bit crazy, which is awesome. It's like that huge marathon debating session that they had in, Canada a couple weeks ago when there was like some 9-day stretch where they had to just sit there through. Because you always hear about the filibuster, and you see it on the West Wing and stuff, but then it never really happens. But they had one of those in Canada a couple weeks back where they're having some dispute about the postal service. And so nobody was allowed to leave their parliament for 4 days. And they just sat there just getting angrier and angrier and more unshaven. It was awesome.
And there's nothing for them to eat other than back bacon and moose meat.
That's it. I mean, they're just eating waffles that taste like hockey pucks and just staring at each other with barely concealed loathing. It was glorious.
Boehner says the Senate will have no excuses for inaction if the House approves his bill.
The bill's not perfect. I've never said it was perfect. Nobody in my caucus believes it's perfect.
Caucus.
But what this bill reflects is a sincere, honest effort to end this crisis.
I think that's the end of it.
He just kind of trailed off like he lost his train of thought and saw something shiny on the wall.
Where are my spectacles?
Senior citizen Mildred Hawkins, which is a perfect name for a senior citizen,
really
by the way,
is.
Didn't mince words when she gave her interpretation of what this means to her.
I worked years and years to save money to live off when I become a senior. What do I have to look forward to now?
Yeah, that's right. Where is your God now, John Boehner? Mine?
She's going to kneecap John Boehner. I just know it.
That's what they should totally do. They should have they should get some sort of a citizens advisory council, by which I mean just a bunch of cranky old people to sit in there. There should be, for every day that they delay this, one senior citizen should be added to the panel, just to make things more and more irascible as they go on. That would be fantastic. Because imagine how great it would be if you just put her in charge of it for like an hour. Or they should have to, rotate it, where like every 5 or 6 hours, somebody else gets to wield the gavel. You know, and then when Mildred Hawkins gets that gavel, you know that business is going to be done. The trash will be taken out.
I want to totally do that when I get old, by the way. I want to be that guy, the person who goes to the public meetings and just gets like way too much attention because I'm like old person on the street. And then once I actually get the news people talking to me, I can just say any crazy thing I want.
Yeah, and also you just don't care at that point.
Yeah, because like, what are they going to do?
I'm old. What does it matter?
If I'm like 85, I literally could kneecap a guy.
Yeah.
And what are they going to, you're going to put me in jail? Okay, well, that can't be worse than the hell I'm living in already.
Yeah, and you can just seize on something completely like disproportionately small and just make that your cause célèbre as you're waiting outside. Yeah, just beat a guy with your umbrella.
The man accused of killing a Google software developer during a drunken road rage incident has been arrested again. Patrick X. Rexrote was taken back into custody on Wednesday after his bail was increased from $50,000 to $1 million. State troopers said that on July 24th, Rexrote's SUV crossed the center line at Northeast 85th and Interstate 405, hitting a BMW and killing the driver, Steve Lacey. Results of a toxicology test showed Rexrote's blood alcohol level was 0.29%, more than three times the legal limit. After the crash, Rexrote got out of his vehicle and started pounding his chest, according to a witness. When Rexrote neared the other vehicle, the witness told him to stay back as the other driver was dead, and Rexrote answered, and walked away.
He was pounding his chest?
Yes. He crashed into a car, got out, started pounding his chest. Then when he started over toward the car, somebody said, whoa, don't go over there, dude. The guy's dead. He went, and then left.
Was he standing on top of it? Ape shall not hit ape! And just, okay.
He does not have a prior criminal record. However, the prosecutor asked for higher bail, citing his flagrant disregard for the value of human life, coupled with clear indicators of impairment. King County Prosecutor Dan Satterberg said, the tragic death of Stan Lacey was not an accident. It was the predictable result of aggressive driving under extreme intoxication. The prosecutor added, after Rexrote was arrested, he told troopers he drank way too much and said, I can't go to prison. I just can't do it.
I'm too pretty.
I'll kill somebody again, and please shoot me right here.
Okay, that's pretty great, though. I mean, it's not that he doesn't want to go to prison. It's that he fears for the population if he does. If he goes to prison, he's just going to bring more mayhem wherever it is they put him. I mean, that's the sort of thing that might just get him looked at in a soft, plushy room that's blazingly white for several years instead of going to jail.
Yeah, they are kind of going towards the he's a danger to others and himself argument.
Maybe we should just keep him under surveillance for a while.
And again, that's something to keep in mind if you're ever in a situation like that. Whatever happens, as soon as you're arrested, just start talking suicidal and crazy. Because instead of getting thrown into, like, the jail with the roughnecks and the hooligans and the rapey people, they'll take you to, like, the hospital.
I had a friend of mine who said that his whole plan, if he ever got arrested or anything like that, he had this whole list of things he was going to do, and his whole deal is, I'm just going to start eating my own fingernails, first of all. He's like, that's the thing, and then I'm going to ask anybody if they've got spare fingernails once I'm out of my own. He's like, if you do that, that's enough to tilt like the axis in favor of he's crazy, like right out of the gate. And then I believe he had some plan for painting with his feces. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. He wasn't going to start with that, though. You build to it. You don't want to start with the feces painting because it's leading with your right.
And also, plus, if you do that early, you still got to be in the room with that.
Well, and then you got to eat stuff later on, and you don't want to be touching your fingers. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. Coming up a little bit later on today, we got the Rick Emerson radio program in which we have Alex Trebek News.
Ooh.
With Alex Trebek Sound,
Woo-hoo.
By the way, which is the best kind of Alex Trebek News. That is all on the way, plus entertainment news later this hour, and Science on the March, etc. Here is Don Taylor.
The woman who is accusing former International Monetary Fund Chief Dominic Strauss-Kahn of sexual assault appeared at a press conference today in New York. This comes after her meeting with prosecutors in the case on Wednesday. Nifa Sestatui Diallo may not be the actual pronunciation, says since she filed charges against DSK, things have not been easy.
Let's see.
I'm here today to tell everybody how much I'm going through for those past 2 months. I'm going through a lot.
Are there cicadas in the background or something?
Yeah,
or?
Diallo says she wants to clear her name again and set the record straight.
I hear a lot of things, bad things, people calling me. That's why I have to be here and let people know a lot of things that they say about me is not true.
All right, if I ever... Sometimes you're better off just getting Don LaFontaine to come pretend to be you at the press conference, you know? Or just... You know.
You get a translator.
Yeah.
Even if you are confident you actually speak the language, if you have a heavy accent, if you're in a foreign country, get a translator.
Or, you know, even that, like, that's, I mean, that might be a thing. Again, if I was arrested, if I had to make some sort of a public statement, I might just feign that I had an accent or some sort of impediment. So then I could hire like Don King or somebody to stand there and just thunder at the podium on my behalf as though he were translating for me. And I could just develop sort of a kind of a thing when I talked, and then, you know, and then I could have someone with a more stentorian delivery speaking on my behalf.
I'm going to just get Cable Hashitani to wear one of his many costumes.
Dr. Manticore.
Get Dr. Manticore to speak for me.
Ms. Taylor, what do you have to say? That would be awesome.
I'm sorry, you'll have to direct all questions to my representative, Dr. Manticore.
It's fantastic.
A former Queens boxer is fighting to knock out a federal ruling that he can't that he can't work as an airport screener because he was born with only one hand. Michael Constantino, 32, insists he's perfectly capable of groping people as a screener for the TSA. Anyone that knows me knows it's ridiculous for them to say I can't open luggage, Constantino told the Daily News. I fought in the Golden Gloves. I work out with former world champions. Opening luggage would be pretty easy for me. After a medical examination, the TSA determined Constantino couldn't perform the job safely or efficiently. Constantino has filed a formal complaint with the TSA. His lawyer, Jonathan Bell, is confident that the Equal Opportunity Commission will reverse the TSA's decision and order the agency to pay for lost wages. Bell said, they just made an assumption that he can't perform this job simply because he doesn't have a right hand without any evidence to support it.
And efficiency really is job one for the TSA, as everybody knows.
He only has one hand, so he couldn't be one of those people that just stands there looking glum and angry with their hands behind their back and goes, go over there, take your shoes off.
Next, I guess.
Yeah. The TSA never allowed Constantino to prove he could perform the tasks necessary to be an airport screener. The federal government is supposed to be a model employer, and this is what they do, the lawyer said. It's a disgrace. He applied online for the position about 2 years ago after he lost his job as a deli manager. He said it sounded like a good job with good benefits. After applying for the job, he passed an online exam and cleared a background check. In an interview with two officials about 7 months ago, his disability was never brought up. Not once was he asked about his missing right hand or any limitations it might cause him, and he walked out of the interview thinking he had landed the job. All that stood in his way was a routine medical exam, but shortly before the exam, he got an email informing him of his medical disqualification. So,
Were they not aware of it? I mean, did they not? Does it say which hand it is?
His right hand.
So when they went to shake hands during the interview process, did they not notice, like, hey, there's nothing there?
I think they just didn't say it, and they just put a check mark in the no, and then just went through the motions of the exam, and then said, well, he's not going to get it.
I would think that the government would, I mean, because I know they're not a governmental agency, but they're regulated by the government, and I would imagine they would have to hire him so they don't get one of those ADA lawsuits tossed their way.
And this may be where this is headed. They argued he couldn't properly conduct pat-down searches using his palms or the backs of his hands. They said he couldn't open zippers or snaps, record baggage tag information in logs, or use his hands to detect prohibited items. He also, they said, couldn't inspect lockets, pillboxes, or medication.
Have they never heard of the hook?
Oh, you know, and the thing is, he's been a boxer for 10 years. And yes, he once won Boxer of the Night at the Golden Gloves. He kind of feels like, you know, I can open luggage.
Imagine being beaten by a one-armed boxer. That would make you really question yourself as a man. You know, if you went home and you just got stumped in the eye all night, I mean, that would just...
And it's not really Golden Gloves in that case, is it?
Well, he could have a glove over them. I would imagine that they don't just let him go in there with just like one of, you know, like a battering ram or something.
It's one glove. It's Golden Glove.
No. I would imagine it's... I think it's a question of what's under the second glove. I'm searching for a He-Man reference right now. Is it?
Well, gloves come in pairs.
It's not the. It's not Rain Man. Who's the guy that has the? The detachable arm? The trap jaw? Whatever.
Inspector Gadget.
Well, whatever it is you got there, you got to put a glove over it. I mean, he can't. What is he going to go with? The whisk on the end of his other stump or something?
Well, I guess that's true. I hadn't really thought about it. I just assumed he just wouldn't be using that one.
No, because otherwise it's all... No, because then
that's true. He probably has a prosthetic, and then they put the glove on it, and then he has, like...
Because otherwise, if it happens to catch you in the face, then again, you've just gotten, you know, then you've just gotten the guy's, like, barely covered bone right in your face.
Yeah, see, I was thinking it was one of those things, like a guy's literally getting beaten by the guy with one arm tied behind his back.
Which would be awesome. I'm going to hand you some additional sound here, including Trebek sound, which we'll have for next hour. You're listening to the Rick Emerson Radio program here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. Next hour, the Rick Emerson Radio Show at rickemersonshow.com. Still to come this hour, Science on the March and Entertainment. Man-at-Arms. That's right, or Man-at-Arm. Man-at-Arms. Yeah, okay, thank you. I knew that there was something. I always want to go to the Ram Man thing, but he's just a little squat guy that's, you know, sort of hunches down and then springs forward, which is really just... Really a lame superpower if you're He-Man. Anyway. You know, He-Man references are one of those things that are just so... There's just such a narrow window of time during which anybody had to have been alive and watching television that any of those are really going to work. Even I don't remember most He-Man references. No. I can barely remember the name of the freaking place where they... Is the whole planet Eternia, or is it just the kingdom?
I never watched He-Man. I
It's not very good.
I know nothing about it. I know there's He-Man. I know there's She-Ra. I knew He-Man had, like, a big kitty cat of some sort.
That would be Cringer.
That's all I know.
Who then became something-something the Battle Cat. Yeah, I got nothing.
And I know that there was also Thundar the Barbarian, but that was a different...
No, two totally different things altogether. Don't confuse He-Man and Thundar.
No.
On the only other thing I remember about He-Man is being really disappointed that Orko wasn't in the He-Man film with Dolph Lundgren.
Now, didn't Thundar also have a big kitty cat, only his big kitty cat was, like, purple?
No, he has a Wookiee, basically.
Oh, okay.
No, he has a... God damn it. This is one of those things that Keelan just corrected me on, like, a week ago, and I've forgotten again. It's Ookla or something or other.
Okay.
I don't really care. Can I just tell you? Let's be honest. 2011. Don't really give a rat's ass.
We're moving forward.
Yeah.
Why look backward?
Here's Don Taylor at the news desk.
Denver police are looking for a man, possibly a transient, who robbed a cupcake shop in downtown Denver, armed with a syringe which he claimed was filled with HIV-tainted blood. The robbery happened around 10 a.m. last Thursday at Gigi's Cupcakes at 5th and Grant Street. Carissa, a manager, just one name, I guess, like Cher, says she and another employee were at the back of the store when they heard someone come in through the front. Her coworker, Katie, went to see who it was. Carissa said the man immediately grabbed her by the arm and kind of forced her into a corner. He showed her the syringe. It was uncapped, and he said it was full of his own AIDS blood. He said he was going to inject her if she didn't open the register. When Katie, who didn't have access to the register, asked Carissa to help open it, the man became agitated at their slow pace. Carissa said, he just kept telling me to hurry up. Once the register was open, the suspect grabbed approximately $300 in cash and left the store. Carissa said she was a little shocked and angry after the incident, but was quick to move on. I had to work the next day, she said, so it was good to get back into the atmosphere.
A syringe full of AIDS blood.
He said, this is my AIDS blood, he said.
I don't know why that strikes me as so perversely amusing, just the linguistics of that somehow. Yeah. It sounds very Borat in a weird way. I can't quite put my finger on why it is.
I shoot you with AIDS blood.
Yes. You listen, where did it happen at? I mean, it's a donut place, but where?
Denver, and it was a cupcake place.
You don't really think of anything happening in Denver at all. Good, bad, AIDS-y, not AIDS-y.
Not a cupcake store. Cupcake stores are happy places.
Yeah, no, I mean, the last thing I remember hearing about Denver was that they finally finished the goddamn airport like 15 years ago, and that's it. Like, I don't think the file marked Denver in my head has been updated since then. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Someone demands that you quit saying kitty cat. I don't know why. Apparently, it's just rubbing a raw nerve out there. Mm-hmm. And Ookla was a mock. So, yes, his name was Ookla, and then he was a mock. That was apparently his species was mock.
Also, someone may have been offended that I was not showing, proper respect to He-Man's animal companion.
Nah, I suppose. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. Here is Don Taylor at the news desk.
A new law that would require almost all privately owned boats to be inspected for invasive zebra mussels will start to take effect in mid-August. The law applies not just to motorized boats, but to canoes and kayaks as well. Owners of the boats who ignore a sign signaling that an inspection is underway face a $90 fine. The inspections can be along highway pullouts or at boat ramps. The Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife and the Oregon State Police Game Division were also planning quick hit inspection blitzes. The zebra mussel is not native to North America. They consume local varieties on their way to encrusting waterways, piers, and water treatment and power plants. Hayden Powell of ODFW said, if the tiny invaders were ever to get into our lakes or rivers, the consequences could be devastating.
Do they explain exactly what these devastating consequences would be?
They consume other local varieties of mussels, and then they encrust waterways, piers, and water treatment and power plants.
Well, I mean, honestly, what doesn't? I mean, so they just eat other things, and then they establish a beachhead, a stronghold,
yeah.
a fortress.
And then they just get thicker and thicker and crustier, and then suddenly, aha! Oh, no! Something's blocked with mussels.
See, I'm sort of impressed when something that doesn't seem like it should be able to accomplish anything at all because it's tiny and effectively brainless, you know, then just screws up the entire program. See also kudzu. So the idea that it's a mussel, which is just like a clam or something, right?
It's a mollusk.
Hey, whenever somebody talks about a mollusk, do you for just a minute in your head picture like a small sort of like a happy brown creature, like a muskrat?
No.
Okay. Whenever people say mollusk, it's that thing where I immediately then picture something that kind of looks like a muskrat or maybe a mongoose, something with a pouch that maybe swims along in a river and waves at you.
I can see that, though, because otters.
That's what I picture.
Otters eat mollusks.
That's what I picture. I picture an otter.
So they're probably kind of side by side in your brain.
In my head, they're filed in the same drawer. Yeah. And so then I have to stop and I have to actively switch over to the accurate profile of the mollusk. Anyway, but I like the idea that kudzu, which is just like a weed, I think. I mean, I think it's just like basically like moss or whatever, has just wrecked the entire South. I mean, more so. It's just there everywhere, and you just can't stop it. So the idea that it's like that sequence in Outbreak when they're talking about the, what do they call it? They don't call it Ebola in Outbreak. They call it like Marburg or something. And they, when the guy says, well, it's 1/1,000,000,000th our size, and it's beating our asses. I like the idea that a mollusk can just destroy an entire riverway. And it doesn't even have a brain. Just sort of sits there. Sort of sits there and causes mayhem. I admire that. As one species to another. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Here is Don Taylor at the news desk.
They kind of, in a way, do to the waterways and such what we human beings are doing to the entire Earth as a whole, when you think about it.
They're just sort of there gumming up the works?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There are companies out there that keep track of every website you visit because every time you go online, you leave a digital fingerprint. Peter Eckersley of the Electronic Frontier Foundation says that's worrisome.
Now, is this going to be one of those stories where they say things like, when you go online, you leave a marker behind or a cookie, which can tell websites exactly where you've been, and people may think that they're surfing anonymously, but that's actually not possible.
Probably.
All right. What is the name of this?
Hacking One.
Here's a Hacking One.
We actually don't really know who their clients are. They may be selling this technology.
That sounds like entirely the wrong hacking soundbite.
Are you sure?
Give it the build-up again. That is Hacking One.
Peter Eckersley of the Electronic Frontier Foundation says that this is worrisome.
We actually don't really know who their clients are.
What is with his
voice? They may be selling this technology to banks. They may be selling it to online advertising companies.
I guess that's accurate.
And that's the bigger concern.
I guess that's the right soundbite because he's talking about nobody knows who these companies then in turn sell your data to. I'm just distracted by this weird thing that he ends, that his words just sort of dissolve in puddles of mushy-sounding R's.
We actually don't really know who their clients are. They may be selling this technology to banks. They may be selling it to online advertising companies.
What kind of accent is this?
And that's the bigger concern.
Where is he from? What kind of nation produces this particular dialect?
Yeah. Don Jackson of Dell's SecureWorks says this opens up a huge potential can of worms.
What we're doing is trusting these companies with the security of that information. We're entrusting them to guard that information. We don't want anyone to be able to break into that system and use it, but unfortunately, when companies aggregate that much information in one spot, it makes them a target.
We actually don't really know who their clients are.
Didn't.
But it's the way he ends the word no. Let me just one more time.
We actually don't really know who their clients are.
I have no idea what that accent is.
It's like at the end of that word, he for just a moment becomes a vinyl record spinning down to zero.
We actually don't really know who their clients are. They may be selling this
Quit talking. Yeah. Here's Don Taylor at the news desk.
Ford can't make enough Focus cars to keep up with rising demand because of equipment problems that have caused a shortage of dashboards. This, according to two people familiar with the situation, who talked to the Associated Press. Machinery that makes the skin that covers the dashboards at a Ford parts factory outside Detroit, that machine works intermittently.
A shortage of dashboards?
There's a shortage of dashboards for Ford Focus cars.
That's like there being a shortage of ceilings or something. That's weird.
Yeah, there's machinery that makes the skin that covers the dashboards, and that machinery only works intermittently. That's forcing the company to take the unusual and costly step of flying in parts from Europe to keep its assembly lines moving. Despite these efforts, the Focus plant near Detroit still can't run at full speed. This problem comes at a time when high gas prices and shortages of Japanese small cars have driven up demand for the Ford Focus. Dealers say they're having trouble getting the newly redesigned compacts, and they've been forced to put customers on waiting lists. The people who didn't want to be identified because they're not authorized to speak about the matter said Ford is working to fix the equipment problem at the parts plant in Saline, Michigan, but so far the company hasn't found a solution. Ford spokesman Todd Neeson said company policy is not to comment on internal workings at the plants, but he said the Saline factory continues to make dashboards for the Focus. Despite the problem, Ford still sold more than 21,000 Focuses last month, making it the company's top-selling passenger car. These sales were, however, 3,500 behind below rival General Motors Chevrolet Cruze, C-R-U-Z-E, Cruze compact. The Cruze has made it a factory in Lordstown, Ohio, that is operating three shifts around the clock to meet demand.
I know this is one of those things that Thomas Gill would probably yell at me for if he were here, because he's probably correct me to be on this in the past. I can never figure out. I never really am sure about cars made here and what that really means. You know, if a car is made in America now, what does that actually mean? Is it just assembled here? Does the crap all come from somewhere else, and it's like there's just a guy drilling it together? Because that was the thing that I always heard, like, through the late 80s and the early 90s, was that even American-made cars were not really American-made. That the component parts all came from somewhere else, and they were sort of assembled and finalized here. They were finished here, but they weren't actually, that no car was made from beginning to end in America anymore. And I don't know if that's true or not.
I think that's true to a certain degree. I don't know how true it is that they're, I don't think they're all just assembled from foreign parts. Because like it says here, they actually, you know, make these dashboards. They do the dashboards in this plant in Michigan. It's just that right now they've got to get them from somewhere else because their machinery is on the fritz or something. And there are manufacturers all over the country who make various parts that are used by various part companies. But I think there are also a number of parts that they do get from overseas
But like the drivetrain or something, or just, yeah. You know, or like the...
I think when they say it's made in the USA now, they're strictly saying that it is assembled in the United States. But that doesn't mean that, you know, all of the parts are made somewhere else.
All right. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Coming up next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program, during which we will have what kind of news, Don?
We will have exactly what it says on the board. We also, just like yesterday, have a Hick Watch and a Corpse Watch.
Really? So
we
it's 2 days in a row of,
I know,
rubes and bodies.
Exactly.
Excellent. Hick Watch, Corpse Watch, and more coming up next hour at RickEmersonShow.com. Still to come up this hour, still ahead, we got your entertainment news, and Science of the March is mere moments away. Here's Don Taylor.
Fire investigators say embers from a backyard fire pit may have caused a fire that damaged a Beaverton home early this morning. Firefighters were called to the home in the 13,000 block of Southwest 2nd Street about 2:30 a.m. The five men who share the home told Fox 12 that they'd used the fire pit before going to bed and thought they had put it out.
Is the fire pit located somehow in the middle of the house?
Apparently it's a little too close to the house.
Okay. This isn't going to be like that thing where they just had like a hole in the kitchen floor and they were tossing fire down into there.
The smoking hole.
Like a month ago. Yeah.
Investigators believe embers caught a nearby chair on fire. Flames then spread to the exterior of the home and into the attic. The men said they had just installed smoke alarms in the home 2 weeks before. They were asleep this morning when those alarms went off, alerting them to the fire. About 25 firefighters responded to the fire and had it under control in about 20 minutes. No one was hurt.
I think we've passed the point in time where really it's necessary for you and the rest of your tribe to have a fire pit right near the place where everyone sleeps.
Also, when I hear five men living in a house, I'm assuming that they are all under the age of 30 and that they're
morons.
There may have been some alcohol ingested while they were enjoying their fire pit.
No, it's true. That is, if you get, I mean, really, the higher the number of guys in a home, the lower the mean IQ is. That is just in my personal experience. That's a, and I'm not excluding myself from that equation.
Let's do our science team.
He says, too bad these guys didn't have anything wet to put in the fire pit. Yes, there was no way in which they could have dampened down the flames of the coals before they went to bed. It was impossible to do. I'm sorry, what are we doing here? Science?
Science!
Yes, here is your Science on the March for Thursday, July 28th, 2011. Science on the March brought to you by Squires Electric. You can find out more about them at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609, 503-252-1609. If it has to do with wires or wiring in your home or business, they can make your life easier. If it has to do with your Ethernet wiring, or whether it's the intercom that people use to alert other people to the fact that their lights are on in the parking lot, something they never hear, by the way, and something that really... serves no definable purpose. But if you want to get that sort of a thing taken care of, if you want to get it upgraded, if you want to get it installed, if you want to get it repaired, if there's been some sort of a damage, you want to have it taken care of, made 5x5 again, as they say, you contact Squires Electric. They'll take care of it for you, and they can give you an estimate up front so you know about what you're going to pay. Squires Electric, they are licensed, bonded, and insured electrical installers, contractors, and supervisors. Most importantly, though, they are the proud sponsors of this year's Science on the March.
TV reality show star Bam Margera, who you may know from the Jackass series, who's had things shot at him and poked in him and jammed up his nose and wrapped around him. He was hospitalized after accidentally falling down a set of stairs. Margera lives in Westchester, Pennsylvania. He was seen on Saturday night at a benefit for his late friends Zach Hartwell and Ryan Dunn in Westchester. And he posted a picture of himself in the hospital this morning. After TMZ reported he was injured, he told TMZ he was injured while he was racing a neighbor up a flight of stairs. I tackled my neighbor and fell down the stairs horsing around, he said. I'm still in the hospital. He may have several broken bones, but he seemed in good spirits on Twitter later. Hospital radness, he tweeted. Bam Bam may have broke ribs and arm from tackling the neighbor last night.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
That wasn't science, was it?
Not really, no.
No, that was in the wrong pile.
Yeah.
Let's pretend that was scientific.
Okay.
There was medicine involved. Ants! This is about ants. Ants heralded as thriving without males or sex turn out to practice sex after all in parts of their range. Asexual animals intrigue biologists because these species are in the minority despite having the advantage that any individual, not just a female, can have babies. One ant forms all-girl farms that cultivate fungi as food throughout much of Latin America. Genetic analysis has now detected signatures of sexual reproduction in some populations of the species in the Amazon basin. Researchers haven't collected a male, but have found otherwise hard-to-explain sperm. This according to a research team reporting in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences.
It seems like, I mean, maybe, look, I'm no scientist, but... it seems like if they're finding sperm there and it's being created by an ant, have they discounted the possibility that the ant really is a male?
Yeah, it seems like there must be something
definition,
male-ish involved.
I think maybe just how we're defining these creatures needs to be revisited.
Tayras, who are weasel-like animals that pick and save unripe tropical fruit, may count as a new example of animals that can take future circumstances into account. Cameras, as well as researcher observations, have documented Tayras collecting both plantains and sapote fruits that had achieved their full size but hadn't sweetened to prime ripeness yet. Instead of eating these finds on the spot, the Tayras put them away, and observers have also seen the animals feasting on fruit later. Animals can collect and store food can get a big advantage for survival. Tayras may inspire a new line of research on cognitive abilities.
What is a Tayra?
It's a weasel-like animal.
All right. And it just...
in Latin America.
And so it just gathers... it, and then it just chatters to its weasel friends to... put these in a paper bag on the fridge!
Right.
Okay.
Hang them up! Hang them up and they'll ripen more evenly.
Okay.
I brought home a banana tree from Walmart.
All right.
That's what they say.
That's,
they seem to say.
Again, that's what a weasel sounds like.
Yes. The newfound fossil of a 155-million-year-old dinosaur has led scientists to claim that Archaeopteryx, the species long held forth as the oldest bird, is not a bird at all, based on the theory that dinosaurs of a feather flock together.
It doesn't have feathers either,
that's
so that's just stupid. All right, fine.
Chinese researchers made the claim in Thursday's issue of the journal Nature, and an outside expert said the study is likely to rock the paleontological community for years to come. Ohio University paleontologist Lawrence Whitmer noted that the latest research, focusing on a fossil species dubbed Xiaotingia shengi, comes 150 years after the discovery of Archaeopteryx.
I think that's a Mortal Kombat finishing move. I don't know that that's actually a...
Which marked a milestone in the study of the origin of birds. Xiaotingia was found by a collector in China's Liaoning province, a hotbed for feathered dinosaur fossils, and then was sold to the Shandong Tinyu Museum of Nature.
I don't know what's being reported in this story. They're saying it's not a bird because it's a dinosaur. But they've spent the last 20 years telling us that dinosaurs are birds.
Well, they found this species that they thought for a long time was the oldest bird.
The Archaeopteryx.
Right. Now they have found a brand new bird, kind
of
like
sort
it,
of.
I guess, that they're going, but no, it's not really a dinosaur at all. It's not a bird. It's a dinosaur. That's what they're saying.
Which bird isn't a bird?
Thomas Holtz, a paleontologist, said, if you just look at Xiaotingia, you'd say, oh boy, another little feathered dinosaur from China. In and of itself, it's not a particularly unusual animal, but the combination of traits, at least in their analysis, pulls Archaeopteryx over to the dinosaur side of things. So...
I still don't understand. I'm not...
They're reclassifying Archaeopteryx as a dinosaur.
If they're just saying... Okay.
Because they found another bird that I guess is more birdy. I don't know.
But I thought... Look, if Jurassic Park is to be believed, I thought the deal was that dinosaurs and birds were now effectively viewed as being kind of part and parcel of the same thing. So it seems like...
Well, they did, you know, one did kind of morph into the other at some point. I mean, all the dinosaurs weren't birds. Okay. Birds aren't all dinosaurs.
So somebody's saying that it's not a bird in any way. They're saying that it is, in fact, a lizard with feathers.
Yeah, well, that's... see, there you go.
Okay, but you're just mindlessly repeating whatever the guy did. And that's just ridiculous anyway. There's no lizard with feathers.
That's what I do here. I mindlessly repeat stuff. That's my job.
Okay, quit typing things like it's just a lizard with feathers. You're not helping the situation. You're just obfuscating things. All right, whatever.
Anyway, what the problem is, apparently, to sum up...
What is the problem?
Well, Archaeopteryx was discovered in 1861, and there was evidence of feathers in the fossils. So they said, bird. But over the last 10 years or so, many dinosaur fossils have been found with evidence of feathers. So they have decided that, basically, you know, they don't know how a lot of dinosaurs got feathers, but many dinosaurs apparently had feathers, doesn't automatically mean bird.
If you found a bunch of fossils of things with feathers that were standing upright, why would you start from the assumption that they're dinosaurs? And then later go, maybe they're birds. Why wouldn't you just go like, there's a thing on two legs with feathers, I think that's a bird, and be done with it?
It was 1861. Everyone was a dumbass in 1861. They didn't know anything.
They must have had pigeons in 1861. Yeah. They knew what they looked like.
Yeah, and they said they saw feathers, and so they said, bird.
All right.
But now they're saying, no, not bird, dinosaur.
So totally confused. All right, I'm going to type the ignorant radio host hashtag myself this time. I'm just going to do that right now. Here's Don Taylor with your science.
A team of researchers led by Lulu Khan of the California Institute of Technology have for the first time developed an artificial neural network. That is, the beginnings of a brain out of DNA molecules. And when the artificially grown brain was quizzed, the brain answered questions correctly. They turned to molecules because they knew that before the neural-based brain evolved, single-celled organisms showed limited forms of intelligence. These microorganisms did not have brains, but instead had molecules that interacted with each other and spurred the creatures to search for food and avoid toxins. The bottom line is that molecules can act like circuits, processing and transmitting information and computing data. Caltech researchers used DNA molecules specifically for this experiment because these molecules interact in specific ways determined by the sequence of their four bases. Scientists can encode the sequence into strands of DNA molecules, essentially programming them to function in a predetermined way. Khan and her team created four highly simplified artificial neurons in test tubes comprised of 112 strands of DNA, each strand programmed with a specific sequence of bases to interact with the other strands. Next, the researchers played a trivia game with the neural network to see if it could identify one of four scientists based on a series of yes and no questions. Basic information related to the identity of the scientist was given to the tiny DNA brain in the form of encoded strands of DNA. To quiz the brain, a human player placed DNA strands that hinted at the answer into the test tube. With these clues, the neural network was able to produce the correct answer, which was visible thanks to fluorescent markers.
Okay.
So, we are now on our way to creating artificial brains.
I think for the rest of the science segment today, I'm just going to nod and smile and say, boy, howdy, what they can't do these days, isn't that something? And that's just going to work out better for me.
And I think those artificial brains are going to go really nicely with all the crazy robots that we're building as well.
Yes. Isn't that something, Don? Mm. What they can't do these days. Howdy.
I read something last night. By the way, there's a fungus called brain fungus in some South American countries. And there's a specific type of ant that will eat the brain fungus. And it does something to the brain, to the little brains in the ants. And it programs them, basically, once they've eaten this fungus, that when the sun is high at noon, they hide under the leaves of this one particular plant and cling to the bottom of it. And they die there. And then that feeds the plant. So basically, it's like this fungus exists to zombify the ants so that they will go underneath this plant and die and nourish the plant.
That's completely weird.
Isn't that crazy?
That's totally weird. That's like some weird Jonestown fungus or something. All right. Where did you read that?
Harper's.
Jesus. You know, Harper's Bazaar?
No, Harper's Magazine, the one with all the smart articles.
Isn't that Harper's Bazaar? What is Harper's Bazaar?
Harper's Bazaar is a fashion magazine.
Are there two different magazines called Harper's?
Yes.
I would think that trademark laws would make sure that that sort of thing didn't happen because it seems like that could lead to some familial confusion at home when it came to reading time.
Now, Harper's is one of those kind of smart sampler kind of magazines that gives you a bunch of articles and things often pulled out of other places.
I have to ask you this: is there really a Marie Claire?
Like a woman named Marie Claire? I don't know.
Okay, just checking. All right, is that the end of science?
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank God Almighty. There's your Science in the March, for the love of sweet Christ. Brought to you by Squires Electric. You can find them at 503-252-1609, 503-252-1609, or squireselectric.com. They are licensed, bonded, and insured electrical installers, contractors, and supervisors. And much to their chagrin and horror, they are the sponsors of this, your Science on the March segment, which happens every day here at Legion of News at Cascadia.fm. That is your Science on the March. Don't forget, coming up next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program at rickemersonshow.com. Here is Don Taylor at the news desk.
Los Angeles police were forced to shut down a section of Hollywood Boulevard Wednesday night after hundreds of people began throwing rocks and bottles when they were turned away from a movie premiere. This woman says the crowd gathered outside the famous Grauman's Chinese Theater and refused to leave.
They had taken over the street, so cars couldn't get through any longer. And it was just crazy. So the police came and they, you know, told everybody, you've got to clear out of here. They gave them a 5-minute warning. And that was it.
This story is useless without telling us exactly what movie they were at the premiere for.
Yeah, I know. I'm looking up now because I don't know.
And when did it go back to being Grauman's Chinese Theater? Also, what kind of a Chinese name is Grauman?
Well, Sid Grauman was the guy who built the Chinese Theater, so it was...
Was he himself Chinese?
No, he was not.
Sid doesn't really sound like one of your more Asian names either.
No, he was one of your Jewish Hollywood showman types, who, one of those heavy-set cigar-chomping fellas, and he created the Chinese Theater.
Okay.
Hold on. I was trying to find out. Anyway, also while I'm looking, this woman says officers acted after the crowd refused orders to disperse.
They came back with the riot gear, and we knew that, well, once they tried to clear it out, people were going to start running down the street. And that's exactly what happened.
So this is a whole bunch of people they were trying to get. Was this afterward, like when they carry Bruce Lee out of the theater at the end of Dragon, or were they not able to get into the movie whatsoever?
I actually have this story here. I was going to do this in entertainment news. That's what this is. It was people who were denied entry to the Electronic Daisy Carnival Experience movie. It's
That does sound Asian.
No, it's...
In that it makes no sense.
It's a documentary about one of those, like... Remember, earlier in the year or last year, there were riots or there were problems at Staples Center in L.A. when they had the Electric Daisy Carnival Experience there. It's one of those big sort of gigantor rave kind of a, you know, several bands and people doing ecstasy and being hippies together kind of thing.
Let's pretend that I do.
With electronic music and crap. Yeah, and that's what it is. And so anyway, they made a guy, DJ Cascade, was one of the documentary's stars. He sent out a tweet inviting
everyone
to a giant block party at the premiere, except the thing is it was a invite-only premiere for this movie, and people wanted to come in.
At a place that only holds like 700 people.
Right, and everyone got all the hippies apparently got really angry.
Okay.
The ecstasy wasn't working, and they started throwing rocks and bottles at cops when they were told to leave.
All right.
A police car was vandalized, and two people were arrested for refusing to follow the order. No injuries were reported. And having lived in Hollywood for some time, just a few blocks from the police station, and also having seen the police presence at just the Hollywood Christmas parade, you don't want to mess with the Hollywood Police Department.
No.
You really don't. They take no prisoners. They put up with no guff.
No, and as I think we learned yesterday, if anybody saw that Gawker article about them beating down that homeless guy, really, you know, the term hair trigger does not even really begin to describe the way the California police operate, to some degree.
Hollywood police in particular, because the city of Hollywood itself is just hardcore. I mean, you've got a lot of prostitution, you got a lot of drug selling, and you, of course, have all of your industry idiots drinking and driving their expensive sports cars, and just all kinds of, you know, street people and tourists. And if you've ever seen any of those videos of them, like, beating down, like, the crazy guy in the Batman costume outside Chinese, it's like, you know, they tell you to do something, you don't do it. That's all the warning you get. They don't have time for your nonsense.
They just look at you and arch an eyebrow, and if you don't move, then they just light your ass up right there.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay. I can admire that, you know, sort of a half a warning, first strike kind of a policy. I mean, really, at least then everybody knows what the deal is. You know the playing field upon which you are acting.
The 84-year-old mayor of Oak Hill, Florida, said the pot plants that narcotics agents found in her yard did not belong to her. Mayor Mary Cook says she was a gardener back in the day, but that she's not up to it anymore. But she also says that if she had planted that marijuana in her backyard, the plants would look a lot better than the scraggly ones that the investigators found.
Good for her.
Cook, again, who is 84 and the mayor of the town, said, "If I were going to plant marijuana, I wouldn't plant it right up next to my house, and I would certainly have a better-looking crop."
Fantastic. See, that's exactly the sort of release that politicians should put out more often. I think if Anthony Weiner had said something like that, I think everybody would have been a lot less brusque with him.
Cook was surprised when investigators found 10 tiny pot plants on a table beside her azalea bush. The table had been dragged there because it's typically in another part of the yard. Cook's son David, 50, who also lives at the residence, said he walked to the area of the yard just a few days ago to check a break in the fence, but he didn't find any marijuana then, he said. Cook says she's been set up for her criticism of the police department. "I criticize the police department all the time," she says. She says it's no secret that she's had brushes with Police Chief Diane Young because she doesn't think she's qualified. Cook isn't accusing Young or her supporters of deliberately setting her up, but the implication is there. Cook insists the plants didn't just materialize. She said she isn't worried about any other attacks by potential enemies. "I just don't know," she said. "I'm not going to worry about it. I'm too old to worry about stuff like that."
Good for her. Well, see, that's, again, more... that is more substantiation for your point about becoming old and then just doing whatever the hell you want, because it's like, you're ancient. Did I tell you the whole thing about my mom? Not my mom wasn't looking for pot as such, but did I tell you the thing about my mom and the marijuana?
A little bit, yeah.
Was it the story that ended with her and I don't even know where to find grass?
Yes.
Yeah.
So you were going to suggest the bowling alley?
Yeah, well,
like,
because
that's
what they always told me when I was. But then she realized that her boyfriend has a dirtbag kid that can probably obtain the grass for her. But yeah, but you get to be like 75, 80, and it's like, give a rip. I mean, seriously, what are they going to do? And you know they're not going to put her in jail. I mean, my mom or the mayor. A, she's the mayor. B, she's like 84 or something.
Yeah.
So, I mean... Yeah, no, I think at that point you can do things with impunity. You are effectively immune from prosecution for almost anything.
That's also the great thing about being 84, too, is that she gets to be, like, sort of also offended that they would even suggest that her marijuana plants would be so, you know, nasty looking.
She can snark with impunity.
Come on.
Absolutely.
I would do so much better. Let's do our entertainment
news. Here's your entertainment news for Thursday right here at Legion of News at Cascadia.fm.
Actor Joe Pesci is suing Fiore Films, a production company behind the John Gotti biopic Gotti: In the Shadow of My Father, for $3 million. The suit alleges that the company used Pesci's name to drum up interest in the project, only to rescind an offer for Pesci to play Gotti enforcer and childhood friend Angelo Ruggiero. The 68-year-old actor also claims he gained 30 pounds for the role. John Travolta is attached to play the title role of Gotti, which is set to start production in January. Other confirmed stars include Al Pacino, Lindsay Lohan, and Kelly Preston. Barry Levinson will be directing it, and James Toback is writing the screenplay. Also, Mike Fiore of Fiore Films claimed it was Pesci who pulled out of the project when the original director Nick Cassavetes left the film in April. Pesci, Fiore said, would not return, he said, until Cassavetes was replaced, and then he rebuffed attempts by Levinson to reach out to him. So, We'll see how that goes. Bradley Dean, a metal rocker and founder of a Christian foundation called You Can Run But You Cannot Hide International Incorporated, is suing Rachel Maddow and MSNBC for $50 million on grounds of defamation. In August 2010, Maddow quoted Dean's radio show in a segment of her show. She quoted Dean as saying, "Muslims are calling for the execution of homosexuals in America. This just shows you they themselves are upholding the laws that even the Bible of the Judean Christian God, but they seem to be more moral than even the American Christians do, because these people are livid about enforcing their laws. They know homosexuality is an abomination." Dean says that Maddow deliberately ignored a disclaimer he issued that said that Dean himself was not calling for gay people to be killed.
As such.
And that the fallout from the segment has caused serious harm to him and his ministry. However, Maddow actually did read the disclaimer before she read Dean's statements. MSNBC has responded by saying the suit is baseless and we stand by our reporting.
Also, suck it. Yeah. That's, I'm going to get a stamp made that just says suck it. And I'm just going to put it on. But, you know, I don't really get many memos. You know, we have evolved to a somewhat paperless office. And so I don't really get a lot of memoranda sent my way, which is unfortunate, because wouldn't it be great to have one that just says, you know, just eat it and just stamp that and just send it right back to somebody. Worst memo ever, you know, and just no, a huge, huge middle finger or something stamped in it. Also, I saw a picture of this guy. Let me just back up two things here. One, I think I am. I think I speak for a great many straight men when I say that I have a, and not a few women when I say that Rachel Maddow is hot as balls in a sort of odd way. Also, I hear she makes a mean martini, which makes her even hotter. There's something about, you know, and I myself am. I'm a lamer in this regard, but there's something about chicks who know booze. There's, I mean, and not just because they're likely to be loaded and therefore easy. There's something about chicks that, like, you know, can, like, tell you, like, something about scotch or whatever. There's, you know, that's hot. Also, she's one of the rare women that looks really good with the short haircut. You know, most women, like, the shorter the hair, and it's like, then it just becomes a whole, then they just look like Mary Lou Retton or something. But also, I saw a picture of this tool, this guy, whatever his name is, Bradley,
yeah.
And he looks like exactly the kind of guy that he sounds like. I mean, he just looks like a guy who's in...
The heavy metal rocker ministry guys all look exactly the same.
He looks like some guy who's in, like, a ninth-rate Allman Brothers cover band. I mean, he's just, you know, and he's got, like, the big biker mustache and everything. He's just a tool, obviously.
Netflix's decision to increase the subscription price for its users of both the DVD by mail and streaming services will result in a loss of more than 15% of its customers, according to a study by Frisco, Texas-based research firm The Diffusion Group, and reported on Tuesday by Home Media Magazine. In addition, the study indicated that 44% of Netflix subscribers who currently receive both DVDs by mail and use the streaming service are likely to cancel the mail service, while 34% are likely to cancel the streaming service. According to Home Media, Netflix's own studies indicated a similar drop, but found that many of the subscribers who are likely to cancel in the third quarter are likely to return in the fourth.
Now here's something that nobody's been... We were talking about this...
Which is what you were saying before.
Yeah, well, yeah. People will do what they always do. It's like people... It's like every time a radio station changes format and people go, I'm never listening to this... Or when they fire, like, their favorite morning show or whatever. I will never again listen to your radios. I will remove it from my presets, which never happens. People always make a big fuss and then they just go about their business because... Because you can't just, like, stick to every idiotic ultimatum that you issue on the internet in a moment of pique because Netflix is raising your rate. But they're effectively doubling the cost, right? If you want to keep more,
yeah,
if you want to keep both, rather,
60% increase.
So it occurs to me that even if people cancel half of that, I mean, it still ends up being not much of a net loss for Netflix, because in other words, if people drop half of that and they've raised the price efficiently, that they're still only going to lose, you know, X amount. Plus, you know, something I did not realize, I should have guessed this, but something I didn't know. I was talking to Seamus about this last night because he sent me one of his patented, like, 3 a.m. explanation in 9 parts to something. I did not know that Netflix is actually legally restrained from offering new releases in a streaming format.
They are.
That studios actually don't allow them to do that. The other thing that I should have realized is that Netflix, one of the reasons they're doing this is because their renegotiation period is coming up at the studios, and the studios are going to do exactly what they did to iTunes, who, I mean, like, the record industry should have been down just, like, kissing the golden ass of Steve Jobs for rescuing their industry from oblivion, because everybody was just getting music for free off the internet, and Apple was able to convince people to pay for stuff online to some degree, which Netflix has done, as opposed to just letting everybody just become, you know, just engage in rampant movie piracy. And so but the movie industry, when it comes time to renegotiate, they're going to want a larger slice of this, you know, showing no gratitude to the fact that Netflix, like, saved a large segment of their industry. So I think Netflix is trying to forestall against huge losses when they have to renegotiate.
I suppose, yeah, and there is a lot of behind-the-scenes negotiation going on about this. I covered the Redbox stuff for when I was writing for Cinematical, and there were some lawsuits with Redbox because several of the movie companies had these proprietary sort of agreements with, say, Blockbuster, that Blockbuster could not, Blockbuster agreed to not buy and sell some releases
right.
until like 30 days until after whatever. And Redbox had no such agreement. And they tried to strong arm Redbox into making those agreements. And Redbox said, suck it. And, you know, and so there's going to be a lot of that going on with Netflix as well.
We'll go out on the suck it. Yeah. Fantastic. With that, we bring down the curtain on another exciting episode of Legion of News. We come to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the milkpacking district in glorious Southeast Portland, Oregon, at the news desk, Don Taylor, Advanced Technology and Magic, Mr. Thomas Gill, Executive Producer Bruce Agler, Chief of Staff Cheryl Kanakoa. Ha! See you next hour at rickemersonshow.com. Thank you for listening. Have a safe and satisfying Thursday, won't you?